Our third speaker this morning is our brother Jesse Adair of the Hamilton Book Road, Ontario Ecclesia. The theme for Brother Jesse's classes this week is The Last King of Judah. Today's class is entitled The Oathen King. Brother Jesse.
If you turn with me to Jeremiah chapter 28, something was brewing in Jerusalem that would eventually make the ears of Nebuchadnezzar perk up. Because in Jeremiah chapter 28, it says, "And it came to pass, verse 1, the same year, in the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the fourth year, and in the fifth month, that Hananiah, the son of Azur, the prophet, which was of Gibeon, spake unto me as Jeremiah in the house of the Lord." And notice in verse 1 of Jeremiah 28, these two groups that were present, listening to this message that Hananiah was going to bring. The presence of the priests and of all the people. And so when Hananiah is going to give his false message, just notice that these two groups, the priests and the people, there was going to be something that would resonate with them, something that they dearly wanted to happen. And Hananiah knew who was listening. Because verse 2 and 3 of Jeremiah 28, "Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, saying, I have broken the yoke of the king of Babylon, and within 2 full years will I bring again into this place all the vessels of the Lord's house that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, took away from this place and carried them to Babylon." So of those two groups, who would especially want that to happen? That the vessels of the Lord's house would be returned. Well, that would be the priests. And verse 4, "And I will bring again to this place Jeconiah," or Jehoiachin, "the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, which all the captives of Judah that went into Babylon, saith the Lord, and I will break the yoke of the king of Babylon." And that would be appealing to the people. Because here's the priests, and they're going to get their vessels back in the house of the Lord. And here's the people, they're going to get their former king and all their brethren back into Israel. And Hananiah knew. He knew who he was speaking to and who was listening. And if you're Zedekiah hearing these words, you would think what appeared to be that the Lord was on your side. That maybe, just maybe, in 2 years, the kingdom of Judah would be restored in measure. And not only that, brothers and sisters, if Zedekiah thought, maybe just maybe, the Lord was on his side, he knew for certain that there were numerous kings who were also on his side. Because if you just look back at Jeremiah chapter 27 and verse 3, Jeremiah was told to make bonds and yokes and put them upon his neck. And in verse 3 of Jeremiah 27, "Send them to the king of Edom, to the king of Moab, to the king of the Ammonites, and to the king of Tyre, and to the king of Sidon, by the hand of the messengers which come to Jerusalem, unto Zedekiah, king of Judah." And so two things would have gone through Zedekiah's mind. Maybe, just maybe, the Lord is on our side. What Hananiah is saying is true. And certainly these kings are on my side. So cannot we have our kingdom restored from out of the hand of Nebuchadnezzar? But you see, Nebuchadnezzar was going to hear about this message, and he was going to learn about this meeting. And it was going to be the reason that Nebuchadnezzar is going to summon Zedekiah all the way to Babylon. And he's going to summon Zedekiah for one purpose. And that is going to be what we're going to consider this morning under the theme Zedekiah, the Oathen King. Because what's going to happen is there's going to be a making of a covenant. There's going to be the promise to keep a covenant. But we shall see by the conclusion of our class this morning that there will be a breaking of a covenant. Now, what I want you to do is come with me to Ezekiel chapter 17, because our story is going to have its footing in Ezekiel chapter 17 this morning under the theme of Zedekiah, the Oathen King. Now, in Ezekiel chapter 17, there was going to be, as it were, a focus on making a covenant. And it was a covenant, really, between two kingdoms. And here's what we find in Ezekiel chapter 17 and verse 11. It says, "Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying," verse 12 of Ezekiel 17, "Say now to the rebellious house, know ye not what these things mean? Tell them, behold, the king of Babylon is come to Jerusalem, and hath taken the king thereof," that's Jehoiachin, "and the princes thereof, and he's led them with him to Babylon." And there in verse 12, that king that is mentioned, the king thereof, that is Jehoiachin, sometimes called Jeconiah. And perhaps a good verse, if it's not already in your margin, is 2 Kings 24 and verse 12. So what had happened is the house of Judah was a rebellious house. The king of Babylon had come in, and he had made an incursion, one of his four incursions, and he had swooped away Jehoiachin, because he was the leader of that rebellious house and the princes thereof, and he led them to Babylon. So Nebuchadnezzar had taken Jehoiachin away, and he had placed Zedekiah upon the throne. And when Nebuchadnezzar placed Zedekiah upon the throne, this is what he made him do. Verse 13 of Ezekiel 17. "And Nebuchadnezzar hath taken of the king's seed," that's Zedekiah, "and made a covenant with him, and hath taken an oath of him. He hath also taken the mighty of the land, that the kingdom might be base or low, that it might not lift itself up, but that by keeping of his covenant, it might stand." So in verse 13, Nebuchadnezzar took of the king's seed, that's Zedekiah, and he made Zedekiah make a covenant. So they would have had actions performed. And furthermore, he said of Zedekiah, "I want an oath out of you. You give me your word that you will keep that covenant." And the whole purpose, verse 14, was that the kingdom of Judah might be based. And the word "based" in verse 14, it means to humble or to be low. And if it could do that under Nebuchadnezzar's hand, then it would stand. It would continue. Now, in his exposition of Ezekiel, chapters 1 to 39, John Offrey says this, that Zedekiah was really being told by Nebuchadnezzar to be a vassal king, utterly dependent upon Babylon. He says, "The native seed planted in the fertile land and by the abounding brooks of the land of Israel was Zedekiah. He was planted there by the king of Babylon," 2 Kings 24. "And initially he grew and developed into a vine of low stature, which was what Nebuchadnezzar wanted. For he had purposely impoverished Israel so that Zedekiah would be a true vassal king, utterly dependent upon him." And furthermore, Nebuchadnezzar made Zedekiah swear that he would obey. Now in verse 13, that word covenant is the Hebrew word bereth, that we're probably familiar with. But that word covenant in verse 13, it means a cutting. So we can probably assume that there was sort of some animals involved. There was a cutting that had happened in this covenant. So this action was then performed. But then also in verse 13, the word oath is a different Hebrew word. It's the Hebrew word alah. And it means a binding. And I suggest to you that that would have been the words. And so here in Nebuchadnezzar, he made Zedekiah go through the actions of committing to a covenant. And then he said, "I want your word." That's the oath that you'll keep it. And if you want, in your own time, you can circle the word covenant or oath, because in Ezekiel 17, the word covenant is going to appear 6 times, and the word oath 4 times. And it's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar made Zedekiah go through when he put him on the throne. And for 4 years, Zedekiah kept it. He kept the covenant. He kept his oath. But when messages from prophets rose up that the captives and Jehoiachin were going to be returned, that the vessels of the house of the Lord were going to be reinstituted, and that messages from these kings that were surrounding the kingdom of Judah came up secretly, when Nebuchadnezzar heard of that, he summoned Zedekiah to Babylon. Now, how do we know that? If you come to Jeremiah chapter 51, in the very same year that those kings came up, and the very same year that Hananiah made his prophecy, false albeit, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Zedekiah to Babylon personally. And we know that because when you turn to Jeremiah chapter 51, this is what we learn when Zedekiah went to Babylon to stand before Nebuchadnezzar, that he might affirm the covenant and oath of which he had made 4 years previous. And here's what we read in Jeremiah chapter 51, verse 59. The word which Jeremiah the prophet commanded Zedekiah, the son of Neriah, the son of Maaseiah, when he went with Zedekiah, the king of Judah, into Babylon in the fourth year of his reign. In this Zedekiah was a quiet prince. So there in verse 59 of Jeremiah 51, Zedekiah is summoned in the fourth year, the exact year that these kings came up secretly to make a confederacy with Zedekiah, and that Hananiah had falsely prophesied that Babylon was on the end, and those in Judah and the vessels of the house of the Lord would be returned. And so while in Babylon, something influential was going to happen to Zedekiah, because he was not alone when he went into Babylon. He was with there, verse 51, Zedekiah, who was a quiet prince. Now the word Zedekiah, the name Zedekiah, it means the Lord is ruler. And he was what's called, at the very end of verse 59, a quiet prince. And that quiet prince is really a chief chamberlain. Now what's a chief chamberlain? A quiet prince or a chief chamberlain is someone who oversees the household of a monarch. It's like the top servant in the house of a monarch, of which Zedekiah was a monarch, a king. So here's this Zedekiah, whose name means the Lord is ruler. And Zedekiah would have known who this man was. He would have known him very well, because he was the overseer of the household of a monarch, a quiet prince, which means a chief chamberlain. And Jeremiah gave Zedekiah a book. And in that book contained these words. Verse 60. So Jeremiah wrote in a book all the evil that should come upon Babylon, even all these words that are written against Babylon. And Jeremiah said to Zedekiah, when thou comest to Babylon, and shalt see and shalt read all these words, then shalt thou say, O Lord, thou hast spoken against this place to cut it off, that none shall remain in it, neither man nor beast, but that it shall be desolate forever. Wait a second. Pardon me. What did I just hear? Jeremiah wrote in a book and he gave it to Zedekiah, and the words of that book, verse 62, was that the very place that Zedekiah was being summoned to in Babylon was going to be destroyed. If you're Zedekiah, you're thinking, what? Well, then who do I believe? Jeremiah, you said 7 years. Hananiah said 2 years. It's going to be destroyed? It was going to be destroyed. But it was going to be destroyed on God's timeline, not on man's. And in fact, this would have served as another object lesson for Zedekiah. Because when Zedekiah read the words of this book that Jeremiah had penned, that Babylon would certainly be destroyed, he was going to do something quite marvelous. Verse 63 and 64 of Jeremiah 51. And it shall be, when thou hast made an end of reading this book, that thou shalt bind a stone to it and cast it into the midst of Euphrates. And thou shalt say, thus shall Babylon sink, and shall not rise from the evil that I will bring upon her. And they shall be weary Thus far are the words of Jeremiah. And for Zedekiah, in the book, or the story of the Bible by Brother H.P. Mansfield, he helps us to sort of understand the thoughts and the turmoil that would have been going on in the mind of Zedekiah. For the fourth year of his reign, Zedekiah traveled to Babylon to personally present his tribute to Nebuchadnezzar. Now, why he was forced to do this, we are not told. But perhaps Nebuchadnezzar had heard that ambassadors of surrounding nations had visited Jerusalem to conspire with the king of Judah to break the yoke of Babylon. And to forestall any such move, Nebuchadnezzar commanded his vassal to come to Babylon and again renew his vows of allegiance. Whatever the cause, the king made the journey, and he took with him a prince of the realm named Zariah, who called the Jews together as Jeremiah commanded him. He read them the scroll that the prophet had prepared. And following the instructions of Jeremiah, Zariah tied a stone to the scroll, and as the Jewish exiles watched, he cast it into the river Euphrates. And as it sank beneath its waters, he turned to the people and declared, "Thus shall Babylon sink, and shall not rise from the evil that I will bring upon her." And you see, brothers and sisters, God had clearly determined that he would break the kingdom of Babylon. And there, though it stood in all its glory, it would eventually become base, and it would sink, and it would rise no more. But God had also said very clearly that none of that would happen until 70 years were accomplished. You know, it's very difficult, brothers and sisters, sometimes, because you get into conundrums where one verse is put up against another, and this verse is put up against that verse. And you sort of have this match between those who are sort of using this verse and that verse. And you never can sort of sort out what the clarity of thought is in the moment. And that helps us because when we are in those situations, we think about the Bible characters which we're learning about. And one such is Zedekiah. And on one side he's hearing this, on the other side he's hearing that. He said, "Well, which one am I to choose?" And what would you do if you were Zedekiah? You would have to fall back onto the law that you wrote out. You would have to pour the sweat and tears over its pages and seek an answer at the Lord's mouth. But unfortunately for many back in Judah, 70 years is going to be too long. And I want you to come back to Ezekiel chapter 17, because as Zedekiah was going to make his way back into the land, we learn more and more about this powerful influence that was going to be over him. That they didn't want to wait for 70 years. They wanted the return to happen immediately, because the seeds of rebellion were already being sown. Because in Ezekiel chapter 17, it says of Zedekiah in verse 15, that though he had made a covenant and he had sworn it by an oath, in Ezekiel 17, verse 14, verse 15 says, "But he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar in sending his ambassadors into Egypt that they might give him horses and much people." And you see, this is what Zedekiah did when he returned. He forsook the law that he had written that said he was not to multiply his horses and send people into Egypt for the intent that he might multiply his horses. Verse 15 says that he did the complete opposite. But he was being heavily influenced by those who were around him. In fact, Israel and the Nations by F.F. Bruce on page 81 says that the influence was too strong to overcome. It was an unwise act on Nebuchadnezzar's part to deport so many of the leading statesmen of Judah with Jehoiachin, because this meant that those who were left in Zedekiah's kingdom as advisors of the new ruler were men of less wisdom and maturity. Many of them had learned nothing from recent experience and still expected that Egypt would restore national independence to Judah. Zedekiah, having sworn an oath of loyalty to the Babylonian king, wished to keep it. But he was too weak to resist his foolish advisors. And furthermore, brothers and sisters, Zedekiah, the oath and king, was going to become Zedekiah the rebellious king. Because also, soon voices were being raised denouncing Babylon and demanding the recovery of all that had been lost. The prophet raised his voice in warning, but it was an anti-Babylonian group which was more and more heated. They egged the people on and eventually got the upper hand of the spineless and vacillating king. Alliances were struck with the bordering vassal states, and the fact that in 588 BC a new pharaoh, Hofra, ascended the throne had clearly a decisive influence on the decision to revolt. And so what happened is Zedekiah determined in his mind that he was going to break his covenant. In fact, that's exactly what he did. Because in verse 15 of Ezekiel 17, you might like to circle these, but notice the four times that we're going to be told that Zedekiah is going to break his covenant. Verse 15. Shall Zedekiah prosper? Shall he escape that doeth such things? Or shall he break the covenant and be delivered? For as I live, saith the Lord God, surely in the place where the king dwelleth that made him king, whose oath he despised, and whose covenant he brake. And in verse 18, seeing he despised the oath by breaking the covenant. And in verse 19, as I live, surely mine oath that he hath despised, and my covenant hath he broken. And four times we are told that in Zedekiah's mind, now here in his rebellious state, he is going to break the covenant that he has made. And so Zedekiah, in the eyes of Nebuchadnezzar, was no longer an oathen king. He was a rebellious king. And he was going to break his covenant. And this covenant that Zedekiah was going to break not only involved Nebuchadnezzar, but it involved God himself. Now I want you to come with me to 2 Chronicles chapter 36. Because when Zedekiah made his covenant and swore it with an oath in the presence of Nebuchadnezzar, Zedekiah also brought in the name of the Lord. Because if you come with me to 2 Chronicles chapter 36, it has this little comment on the action that Zedekiah made when he made that covenant. And notice what it says in 2 Chronicles chapter 36 at verse 11. It says, Zedekiah was 1 and 20 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. Verse 12 of 2 Chronicles 36. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord his God, and he humbled not himself before Jeremiah the prophet, speaking from the mouth of the Lord. And verse 13 tells us of 2 Chronicles 36. And he also rebelled against King Nebuchadnezzar, who made him swear by God. So when Nebuchadnezzar made Zedekiah make this covenant and swear with an oath, Nebuchadnezzar said, and you are before your God. And Zedekiah did. He did. He knew he was not just before the king of Babylon. He was before the king of heaven and earth. And so what Zedekiah had done, it wasn't only Nebuchadnezzar's covenant that Zedekiah broke. He had broken God's covenant. And it would be God who would punish him through Nebuchadnezzar. For Zedekiah had sworn his oath in the name of the Lord, 2 Chronicles 36. Therefore, he was obligated to keep it. And in looking to Egypt for help, Zedekiah turned a deaf ear to the warnings of Jeremiah and Isaiah, who had preached the same message over a century before. And when it says in verse 13 of 2 Chronicles 36 that Nebuchadnezzar made Zedekiah swear by God, that word swear in verse 13 is the Hebrew word shabah, and it means to seven oneself. And in other words, Nebuchadnezzar made Zedekiah affirm his covenant by taking an oath. Now, brothers and sisters, there's numerous individuals in the scriptures where by an oath they actually ended up breaking their covenant. Zedekiah in Ezekiel 17, verse 13. Herod in Matthew 14, verse 7 to 9 with John the Baptist. Peter, his denial of the Lord Jesus in Matthew 26, verse 72. How about the people who came back, built the wall with Nehemiah, Nehemiah 10, verse 29. And how about this individual, Shimei, in 1 Kings chapter 2. Now I want you to come with me to 1 Kings chapter 2, because Shimei has some resemblance to what Zedekiah was doing and how he also broke his covenant and the oath which he had sworn. So you come with me to that last one on the screen there, Shimei, and you come with me all the way to 1 Kings chapter 2, into the reign of Solomon. You know, at the time of making a covenant, someone could be quite sincere, and they could firmly believe that by swearing by an oath, that they will endeavor to actually keep their covenant. Well, here's such a one who perhaps thought so, but in the end, he broke it. And here's what we find in 1 Kings chapter 2. This is the reign of Solomon. And here's what we find in verse 36. Solomon the king sent and called for Shimei, and he said unto him, build thee a house in Jerusalem. Dwell there, go not forth any whither. For in it shall be that on the day that thou goest out and passest over the brook Kidron, thou shalt know for certain that thou shalt surely die, and thy blood shall be upon thine own head. And you see, you know the story of Shimei. Shimei, as David was in his lowest and most vulnerable point, he cursed him. And as David was giving his final counsel to his son Solomon, he gave counsel on what should happen to Shimei. And it was a top priority for Solomon to call him into his kingly chamber and to say, the day you leave this city, you will bring blood upon your own house. And notice what the response was from Shimei, verse 38. And Shimei said unto the king, the saying is good. As my lord the king hath said, so will thy servant do. But you know the story. At the end of 3 years, Shimei had a problem. And it was a material problem. He was being diminished. And he was losing servants who had run away. So what happened? Verse 41. And it was told Solomon that Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and was come again. And the king sent and called for Shimei personally to bring him into his presence and said unto him, did I not make thee to swear by the Lord? And protested unto thee, saying, no, for a certain on the day that thou goest out and walkest abroad any whither, that thou shalt surely die. And thou saidest unto me, the word that I have heard is good. Why then hast thou not kept the oath of the Lord and the commandment that I have charged thee with? And you can just imagine, as Shimei stood there in Solomon's presence, he knew that he had been found out, that he had broken his covenant, the one that he had sworn by with an oath. And as Shimei was brought before this king, what could he say? And you see, Zedekiah not only had despised his oath and broken his covenant that he made with Nebuchadnezzar, but in effect, Zedekiah had despised the oath and broken the covenant that he had made before God. And the end result of Shimei was his utter destruction. And when you come back to Ezekiel chapter 17, what was Zedekiah to do? Because all the way back in Ezekiel chapter 17, it was ever so clear before Nebuchadnezzar what had taken place. That the king's promise was really a despisal of an oath and a breaking of a covenant. And here we are in Ezekiel chapter 17, verse 13, he made a covenant. Verse 13, he had taken an oath. Verse 14, he was to be keeping of his covenant. Verse 15, he broke the covenant. Verse 16, it was an oath he despised. Verse 16, it was a covenant he broke. Verse 18, he despised his oath. Verse 18, he was breaking his covenant. Verse 19, it was an oath that he despised. verse 19. It was a covenant he had broken. Brothers and sisters, it's so clear, it jumps right off the page, that this was the mind of Zedekiah. And unfortunately, this is what he had promised to Nebuchadnezzar before God. So I suppose the question is, if you're Nebuchadnezzar, what are you going to do about it? Well, you're going to come into the land of Judah, and you're going to destroy the kingdom of the king who made a covenant with you and swore it by an oath. Because if you just move forward a few chapters into Ezekiel chapter 21, that's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar determined to do. Because in Ezekiel chapter 21, Nebuchadnezzar was going to make preparations for war. And in Ezekiel chapter 21, we read in verse 18, "The word of the Lord came unto me again, saying," verse 19 of Ezekiel 21, "Also thou son of man, appoint thee two ways, that the sword of the king of Babylon may come. Both twain shall come forth out of one land. And choose thou a place, choose it, at the head of the way to a city. And appoint a way that the sword may come from Rabbah of the Ammonites, and to Judah in Jerusalem, the defense." Now here on the screen, this is sort of a map of what we're sort of reading here in Ezekiel 21. That King Nebuchadnezzar was going to come all the way personally from Babylon, and most likely he was going to stop at what it says, verse 19, two ways. And Damascus was known as a city of two ways. And what you could do from there is from Damascus, you could venture across the Jordan and you could make your way to Judah in Jerusalem. Or you could stay on this side Jordan and remain at Rabbah. So what we're reading here in Ezekiel 21 is that Ezekiel was told to make a prophecy that the king of Babylon was going to come and he was going to stand at the parting of two ways. And in his exposition on Ezekiel, Brother John Alfrey says this: "Nebuchadnezzar in the prophet's diagram is shown to arrive at a point in the road where it diverged. Should he go to the right, he would go against Jerusalem. If he chose to go to the left, he would go against the Ammonites who had also rebelled against him." And here we see the drama of the situation. For the destroyer of the Gentiles is on his way, and he has gone forth from his place to make the land desolate. Now what I want you to do is in verse 21 and 22, we're going to find out what the outcome was when Nebuchadnezzar arrived at this place where two ways diverge. And I'm going to suggest to you that in verse 21 and 22 that you circle the word two, because it's going to appear no less than seven times in verse 21 and verse 22. And it is almost going to be the providential direction that Nebuchadnezzar is going to follow. Verse 21 of Ezekiel 21. "For the king of Babylon stood at the parting of the way, at the head of the two ways, to use divination. He made his arrows bright, and he consulted with images. He looked in the liver. At his right hand was the divination for Jerusalem, to appoint captains, to open the mouth in the slaughter, to lift up the voice with shouting, to appoint battering rams against the gates, to cast a mount, and to build a fort." And what we're being told in verse 21 and 22 is that depending on the divination result that Nebuchadnezzar was looking for, he was going to determine the direction. He was going to make sure they had captains over his army. He was going to give them specific orders for making the preparations of war, the battering rams, the ramps, so that when they got to their desired city, they would overtake it. And what's fascinating is that Nebuchadnezzar, he used divination. You see, in the prophecy of Ezekiel, W.H. Bolton on page 93 says, "Here, at the parting of the ways, the king of Babylon stayed while he took counsel by augury to decide which of these two roads he should follow. In adopting the customary methods of divination, shaking arrows, consulting teraphim, examining the signs of the liver in a newly slain animal, he would decide his way. For oaths of fealty had been taken by the king of Judah, and those oaths had been broken. And therefore the king of Babylon would call these facts to mind and take the right-hand road to Jerusalem. And not only that, but you see in verse 23 of Ezekiel 21, it shall be unto Judah as a false divination in Judah's sight. To Judah they have sworn oaths, but Nebuchadnezzar will call to remembrance the iniquity that they may be taken. You see, verse 23 is telling us that as news reached Jerusalem, that Nebuchadnezzar has actually chosen the right hand and he is marching his army down towards Jerusalem, they're still going to think that it's wrong. They're still going to think that though they're iniquitous, that God will somehow deliver them. They won't believe it because they'll believe in the false prophets who said in 2 years that nation will be destroyed. You know, it's ever so challenging, brothers and sisters, to actually have a conversation with someone. And you're like, wait a second. Don't we both understand the scope of the scriptures? How can we be so divided? How can we have so much in common? Yet on a few points, we cannot find common ground. Doesn't it just make you mad? Doesn't it cause you to then earnestly, in your prayers, try and find a resolution? But you see, that was going on in the kingdom of Judah. There were some who were listening to the false prophets. Everything else was fine, but not on this. And life and death held in the balance. And they thought that they would still be rescued by the hand of the Lord. Now, I want you to come with me to Jeremiah 21. Because we have to ask ourselves, is there any hope for Zedekiah to turn his heart and seek the Lord? Well, when we turn to Jeremiah chapter 21, when the Babylonian army arrived at Jerusalem, Zedekiah actually turned towards Jeremiah. And here's what we find in verse 1 of Jeremiah chapter 21. The word which came unto Jeremiah from the Lord, when King Zedekiah sent unto Jeremiah Pasher, the son of Melchiah, and Zephaniah, the son of Maaseiah, the priest, saying, inquire, I pray thee, of the Lord for us, for Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, maketh war against us. If so be that the Lord will deal with us according to all his wondrous works, that he may go up from us. Now, brothers and sisters, here is Zedekiah. He is turning towards Jeremiah to see if there's going to be a message from the Lord. He knows that Nebuchadnezzar has arrived. His army is there prepared to besiege the city. And he asks Jeremiah to make an appeal unto the Lord, according to verse 2, all the Lord's wondrous works. So Jeremiah, he tells Zedekiah this message, verse 3. Then said Jeremiah unto them, thus shall you say to Zedekiah, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, behold, I will turn back the weapons of war that are in your hands, wherewith you fight against the king of Babylon and against the Chaldeans which besiege you without the walls, and I will assemble them into the midst of the city. And I myself will fight against you with an outstretched hand and with a strong arm, even in anger and in fury and in great wrath. And I will smite the inhabitants of the city, both man and beast, and they shall die of a great pestilence. And you would have noticed there four times, verse 4, twice, verse 5, and verse 6, that the Lord said, I will do this. That though the weapons of my warfare are outside of your city, besieging you as we speak, it will actually be the Lord who will fight against you. I will turn back the weapons of war in your hand, verse 4. I will assemble them in the midst of the city, verse 4. I myself will fight against you, verse 5. And I will smite the inhabitants of this city, verse 6. So if you're Zedekiah, what's there left to do? Because Jeremiah kept going and he said in verse 7, and afterwards saith the Lord, I will deliver Zedekiah, king of Judah, and his servants and the people and such that are left in the city from the pestilence, from the sword, and from the famine into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hand of their enemies, and into the hand of those that seek their life, and he shall smite them with the edge of the sword, and he shall not spare them, neither have pity nor have mercy. And three times Jeremiah said to those messengers, you go tell Zedekiah, and here's a prophecy just for you, that you'll be into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, into the hand of your enemy, and into the hand of those that seek your life. But there was one thing that Zedekiah could do. If he could do this one thing, all the judgments that Yahweh had said would come upon Jerusalem and him might be avoided. Because you see in verse 11 of Jeremiah 21, Jeremiah told Zedekiah and the city of Jerusalem that the only way they could find deliverance was if they became a deliverer. And they delivered those who had been spoiled out of the hand of their oppressors. Because in verse 11 of Jeremiah 21, and touching the house of the king of Judah, say, then hear ye the word of the Lord. O house of David, thus saith the Lord, execute judgment in the morning, and deliver him that is spoiled out of the hand of the oppressor, lest my fury go out like fire, and burn that none can quench it, because the evil of your doings. And you see, in verse 12, Jeremiah said, if you in the morning become a deliverer, and deliver those that have been oppressed in this city, then you might escape the hand of the king of Babylon. But he had till the morning to act. And what's remarkable, brothers and sisters, if you just come to Jeremiah 34, he did. Zedekiah did. Jeremiah had told him, in the morning, if you become a deliverer and you deliver those who have been oppressed in this city, then God might spare this city and you. And what did Zedekiah do? Well, you come to Jeremiah chapter 34, and here's what it says in verse 8. And this is the word that came unto Jeremiah from the Lord. After that king Zedekiah had made a covenant with all the people which were at Jerusalem to proclaim liberty unto them, he freed them. He removed the hand of oppression. In the morning, he acted. He listened to Jeremiah. And not only that, verse 9, that every man should let his manservant and every man his maidservant, being a Hebrew or a Hebrewess, go free, that none should serve himself of them, to wit of a Jew of his brother. And he freed them. He lifted the hand of oppression from all those that were oppressed in Jerusalem. He listened to Jeremiah. And not only that, not only did Zedekiah do it, he inspired all those of the princes in the city to do the same. Because in verse 10 of Jeremiah 34, now when all the princes and all the people which had entered into the covenant heard that everyone should let his manservant and his own maidservant go free, that none should serve themselves of them anymore, then they obeyed and they let them go. And almost as if in the 11th hour, as Nebuchadnezzar and his army was outside of the walls preparing the siege, Jeremiah says, you have one chance that the city might be saved. And Zedekiah, he took it. And in the morning, he made a covenant. And he restored. And he caused the princes to bind themselves into that covenant. But just as quickly as he made this covenant, and just as quickly as the princes made theirs, they broke it. Why would they do that? In this moment of spiritual rejuvenation and listening to Jeremiah the prophet, they had freed everyone in the city. And just as quickly as they had done so, they broke their covenant. And there's a very specific reason why they did. But we will have to consider that tomorrow in our fourth class entitled Zedekiah, the Warden King.